Mr. Springer.
Yes.
John Huckleberry here. How you doing?
John, nice talking with you. Fine, thanks.
Yes, nice talking to you again. Gosh, it's been a long time. I'm
getting better looking.
No, I noticed that, actually. It's really
on radio. It's the only way you can.
We got to talk to Springer. He's taking some vitamins or something.
Yes.
All right, here we go. Jerry Springer, what is the language difference, in your view, between someone like Hillary Clinton and someone like Donald Trump, who's not a dumb person, and he's certainly not a poor person. I mean, this isn't a class issue, but he says, you know, thousands and thousands and millions and talks in this sort of very informal hyperbole about stuff that makes it almost impossible to evaluate what he's saying.
Well, I don't think he's educated in the area of public affairs, in the area of politics. And so he talks, because he's not educated in that area, he talks in street language. He talks as if you're hanging out in a bar and you're getting ticked off at somebody and, you know, maybe doesn't use, you know, the total curse words, but it's the same kind of slang which gets the message across. Donald Trump isn't trying to win an argument, in a sense, on the intricacies of an issue. He's not reaching out to an audience that is reading policy papers. And I don't mean that in an elitist way. I mean, it could be of any income group. It's just people that aren't necessarily interested in what the particular solution is. It's just that they're upset with the way things are going. They're upset maybe with their own lives. Years ago, used to have, you know, we had television sets that if it suddenly started to go on the blink, you'd get up off the couch, you'd walk to the television set and whack the side of the TV set and you were ticked off, maybe
right.
even cursing as you were hitting it.
Uh-huh.
So you didn't really intellectually think that the problem would be permanently solved by a whack to the side of the TV set. It was just a temporary solution to express your, you know, you being upset with what's going on, and maybe it'll bring back a picture for a moment or two. And that's basically what he's doing to Washington, to the whole political environment. He's taking a baseball bat. He's, in a sense, being hired by angry people to, you know, we don't want to hear what the causes were, what the particular solution is. Just hit those damn people. And boom. And that, and the people that are that angry are enjoying that expression of anger at the moment. But it's not a long-term solution. And that's why in something like a debate, of course he, you know, looks horrible in a debate because, you know, Hillary Clinton has spent her whole life, you know, on these issues, understanding it. There's probably never been, whatever you think of her personally, there's never been anyone more educated on the issues of politics, government, social services that has not been president before. So she's got that. And he's just coming with a baseball bat.
So,
boom.
So it's Fonzie versus, you know, JFK here? I mean,
Look, Donald Trump was inevitable. Let me explain that just a second. What I mean by being inevitable, for at least the last 40 years, you know, and maybe it started with Goldwater, but certainly since Reagan, when Ronald Reagan said, government can't solve problems, government is the problem, we have raised two generations of Americans who believe that anything government does is horrible. All politicians are corrupt. The whole system is rigged against you. Washington is evil. And then every commercial we ever see politically, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, is how the other guy is a bum. The other guy should be in jail. The other guy is a pervert, whatever. Well, if you raise two generations of kids to believe that about our own government, about our own society, you can't then be surprised that eventually someone would run for president who is absolutely anti-government, anti-politician, anti-anything having to do with these social services. Now, in order to run for president, you have to be well known. Well, in American society, other than politics, the only two areas you can be well known and are either sports or entertainment. Well, athletes are too young to run for president, so we should have seen it coming that eventually someone would run for president who was an entertainer and totally against government and Washington. Did we know it'd be Trump? No, but it would be someone like him, and that's exactly what we're living with today. Donald Trump was inevitable.
And I think we're past the surprise point here, but the thing that was illustrated to me by the debate that's kind of frustrating is how do you decipher what it is that he's saying without sounding like an elitist? Because clearly what he is saying is meaningful to a large constituency out there, just as the kinds of people that are on your show, as you suggested Trump might do well to be on your show, that expression of emotion is very meaningful to the people that tune in. The question,
but it's a singular emotion. It doesn't offer a solution to any of this, any solution that that makes any sense that can work, which is why but within the Republican Party, the leadership, former Republican presidents, former national security advisors, they're backing away from Trump. They understand that. That he's not offering any serious solutions. He's just saying, we're going to get China. We're going to get those Hispanics. We're going to keep those Muslims out. We're going to, it's just a bunch. It's a guy being ticked off. And that relates. But it's not a particular answer to what's going to happen. So, of course, he's not going to come out well in a debate. You can't be up there for 90 minutes and just saying F you, F you, F you the whole time. He didn't say those words, but that was the sentiment. And, you can't just do that for 90 minutes and look like you know what you're talking about.
But are there enough people out there? Are there enough people out there who respond to that sort of emotional intensity about Washington? That language that can actually come close to defeating an elitist Washington Hillary Clinton?
Well, elitist is a conclusion. To use that term, someone who is very well educated and devoted her life to public service. I guess it's a small group of people that have done as much as she has, or, have devoted their whole life to that kind of a thing. So, I would just say that. But are there enough people? Is it possible Trump could win? I guess so, because ultimately it gets down to the fact that who's going to show up to win. If everyone had to vote, he would get defeated soundly. If every citizen had to get up and go to the polls and vote, no, his is not the majority opinion. But his is a significant force within his political party, or at least the political party he's aligned himself with for this election. But no, I don't think most people agree with that. Look, the demographics of America have changed. He may be going after white working class men, but there are not enough white working class angry men in America to win an election anymore. Sure, you can win the primaries. First of all, you're dealing with a particular group of people that vote in Republican primaries that are conservative to begin with. So in that universe, he can get more votes than the 17 other candidates. But, does most of America believe with what he says? No. I don't think that, so I'm not suggesting that the election is over, that, oh my God, Trump has won.
No. It's a question of, is he communicating? I mean, when he says thousands and thousands of companies are moving out of America,
well,
and he only
nonsense,
cites one.
No, of course. The newspapers, the major newspapers in America in the last several days have literally been devoting full pages to all his lies, to all his statements, and then they actually put what the fact is. But, if you repeat a lie often enough, there are enough people that don't study any of this that, well, he said it. It must be true. There was an interview last night on the news with this woman on, I think it was in Florida, just looked like a middle-aged woman, in the shopping mall or whatever. And she was still talking about, Obama wasn't born here. And then the reporter said, well, he did, you know, and she said, why doesn't he produce his birth certificate? And the reporter just very calmly said, well, he did in 1911, and he showed it, and we have the pictures, and everyone saw the birth certificate, so he was born here. So her answer was, no, he's not. No, he wasn't. Well, yeah. You know, that's what happens is we all are more comfortable getting information that we already have. In other words, taking a point of view we already believe in.
Right. So underscore what I already believe. Make it sound like things that I already know. I guess from
That's how you sell.
Right.
In other words, when there's a commercial to buy a particular car, the first part of the commercial is saying things or showing things that the consultants already know you like. Boy, you like a car that goes really fast, that doesn't cost a lot, that is, you know, and so you're sitting there at least mentally in your mind nodding your head yes, and then at the very end they say, and therefore buy this car.
All right,
so as long as you got the head going up and down, eventually you can make the sale, and that's what they're doing in politics.
And the birth certificate thing was resolved in 2011, not 1911. I just wanted to...
Excuse me, 2011. Yeah, no, okay. Yeah, so you can tell I'm...
Exactly, right. Yeah. So, but from your perspective, I mean, you've kind of seen both sides. I mean, you've seen the America that is of this articulate kind of Washington debate speak, policy speak. You've also heard the eloquent speeches of people that, you know, can actually generate some serious emotion as well as talk about policy. And you've heard this kind of raw emotion on your program that is of hyperbole and, you know, it's not fact-based. What do you see when you look at that debate? What does Jerry Springer see when you look at that debate?
Well, I never thought that someone on my show should be president of the United States. And I think we have to separate it. First of all, the people on my show, the difference between them and Trump is the people on my show, you know, the people that come on are telling the truth. They're angry about something that just happened in their life. Their boyfriend is suddenly sleeping with another girl, with their other friend. So, you know, it's there. No one on the show is trying to express a particular point of view. They're not trying to make a sale. They're coming on the show because they're expressing something that's going on in their personal life that they're upset about. That's authentic. That is real. The danger of Donald Trump is he knowingly is appealing to people's anger, which exists because of circumstances, and trying to take that to the next level to make the sale, saying, you are angry, therefore vote for me. Give me power. Give me more notoriety. You know, that's the difference. There is no sale trying to be made on a silly talk show like mine. There is a sale trying to be made in the political arena, and that's dangerous. We have never, ever, ever in American history had a candidate for president from the major political party run opposed to the idea America. What we have to understand is that America is basically an idea. It is the only nation in the history of the world ever created by an idea. Every other country, without exception, started out either as a tribe, an ethnic group that wanted to expand itself, get a little more land. It became a kingdom or an empire, wanted access to the sea so they could have trade. That's how every country in the world started, except America. America was first an idea, as articulated in the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson, the Bill of Rights. Today it's manifested in the Statue of Liberty, that this was the one place on earth where it didn't matter who your parents were, what your religion is, what ethnic group you're from. You have a place in America where you can be as much as you, or at least try to be as much as you can be. That's the idea. And now we have a guy who literally, metaphorically, and maybe literally, wants to replace the Statue of Liberty with a wall. He is opposed to the very idea of America. That is what is so scary. That is what is unsettling. This is not an election that is a debate between liberals and conservatives or Democrats and Republicans. It has nothing to do with that. It's a debate about whether or not we are serious about the idea America. Because if you don't believe in the idea America, then you have to ask yourself, why have all our sons and have so many sons and daughters over the years fought and died for this country when we don't even believe in it? That's what's at stake. That's why you're feeling something a lot different this time than in other elections. This is not an election about Donald Trump. It's an election about us.
You said that Donald Trump is someone who's exploited and appealed to this angry constituency for his own gain. Some people would say that that's what you've done in entertainment.
I'm not trying to sell anything.
Yeah.
No. Whoa. What our show, and look, our show is the stupidest show on television. I've said that for years. But all our show is, it's, hey, you got a problem that you want to talk about, yell about, whatever, you can come on. You got to tell the truth. And because our show is about dysfunctional behavior, it's got to be something that's out of the ordinary. As long as it's truthful and out of the ordinary, you can come on. Period. That's the platform. But I'm not, you know, I would never say to them, and therefore, by the way, please vote for me. Please change America. We don't, you know, our show doesn't deal with important issues. Our show deals, look, the people could come on the show maybe angry, but it's not life-changing. They're angry about who they're dating.
Ask Trump to come on.
He won't, because on our show they pull the wigs off. Sorry.
That's the deal breaker right there.
Yeah, he won't. If I could guarantee that they wouldn't touch his hair, he'd be on my show.
Jerry Springer.
Look, I don't have anything personal. I mean, I hate his politics. And I hate what he's doing on the issue of race, et cetera. But it's not like I have a personal grudge against him. I once worked for him for a little bit because I was the host of the Miss Universe pageant back in 2008. And he's been only nice to me. I mean, I can't think of one instant ever where he's been mean to me or whatever. So it's not that. You know, I have people in my own family who I love, but they shouldn't be president of the United States. I'm just upset because it shows a disrespect for our country that you can have never, ever been the head even of a village council, of a township trustee, a city councilman, a mayor. You've never had any job in an environment, in a government that provides public service, ever. And yet you suddenly say at the age of 70 or whatever, gee, you know what? I think I'd like to be in politics. Oh, can I be president? I mean, your entry-level position to delivering public services is leader of the free world, president of the United States. How little do we think of our country that we think that the guy's first job should be our leader? I mean, it's really unthinkable. If, God forbid, you would have to bring your kid in for surgery and you go into the operating room with your kid and in comes the doctor, don't you want to know that the doctor at least went to medical school?
Jerry Springer, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
He's a former mayor of Cincinnati, host, of course, of the Jerry Springer Show and current host of the Jerry Springer podcast. He spoke with us from Cincinnati Public Radio. Have a good one, Jerry.
Okay, thanks for having me.